So, change is coming. And right now, for all of us, it can be especially vivid. In the next days, particularly, there will be changes. Some of you will be leaving soon. And for those of you who are staying, the routines will change. There may be some bumpiness, more activity perhaps. And then in some days, the barbarians are coming, you know, the new crowd. They'll be bringing that outside energy with them. So particularly if you're staying, we really understand that you may be feeling protective of the practice right now. Maybe you're already planning how to be in the coming days to keep the practice going. Or maybe you're planning what you want to adjust in your spaces so that it's perfect for the next 2 weeks. All kinds of tightness can arise in an attempt to control our inner and outer environment, or to keep the momentum going, while actually resisting what's happening here and now. For all of us, whether we're staying, whether we're going, it's our common human experience, it's our common experience as sentient beings, that there will be change, that resistance is futile. And so the question arises, how to be graceful in that flow of change. And we also know, for those of you who are leaving, that there may be concerns about what you've understood, what you've opened to, whether these things will kind of fly away like dust in the wind as soon as you go out the front gate. Often we know what we've seen and understood on retreat, what we've opened to. We trust that while we're here. But we don't trust its durability. Or maybe you're feeling very open and vulnerable, afraid of how you'll meet the world out there. And the questions that often come at the ends of retreats may be arising. How do I keep the practice going? How do I keep this openness of heart? So today I want to talk about metta bhavana and metta itself and transitions from a couple of angles. First, to speak a little bit to the value and importance of continuity, and then to talk about the relationship between metta itself and opening to change. So, about the transitions that we face. Change will happen. So first, to say very directly and honestly, you can't possibly keep things going as they are here when conditions change and you're out there. Your experiences will change because conditions change. And you will feel different. perhaps that storyline that you dropped here comes back. Perhaps there's an impulse to control that returns. Perhaps you'll feel more closed than you are here. But really, this is normal for all of us until we're completely enlightened. Insight and compassion come and they go. And to understand that this is normal is actually really helpful because it doesn't set up any unrealistic expectations. To the extent that this is a deep opening, a really deep opening, you can trust that you'll remember it out there. Even if the habit comes back, it won't have the teeth that it did. It won't grab you as much. And if the opening isn't as deep as we might like or think, there's still the memory of, oh wait, there's another way to do this. So it doesn't have quite the power it did. And there are things that we can all do to keep from backsliding into those old habits, to maximize the amount of time that that open-heartedness of metta is available to us out there in the busyness and chaos of life. The short answer to how do we keep it going is just to keep it going. That doesn't take an hour to say. But really to reflect about continuity and the importance of it. Because this is what does that, both here and in daily life. And over and over and over again, we've spoken in one way or another about the importance of continuity in the practice. Really, this is the place where we exert effort in the practice, energy. We can't create the metta, but we can make some effort to be continuous. And that basic instruction, which is to over and over again come back to the phrase, to the connect with the meaning, to connect with the beings for whom you're radiating loving kindness. Over and over again to plant the seeds. This is what continuity is. And in the formal sitting and the formal walking practice, it looks like that constant reinclination to the phrase, to the meaning, to the person. So that if we find we've gone off someplace, the instruction is simply to gently bring the phrase back up, to connect, and begin again. Always, always, always coming back to the metta. Gently drawing the heart back. This is what builds that habit, and it results in the one-pointedness, which is concentration. And here on retreat, no matter what is happening, we dwell in metta from the moment we wake up until the moment we go to sleep, or at least that's our intention. And as you well know from the Metta Sutta, and what we've all been saying, is that the practice is not meant to be limited to this formal sitting and walking. remember those lines in this Metta Sutta. Sitting, standing, walking, lying down, one should sustain this recollection. It covers any posture the body might be in. And all waking moments. So connecting moment to moment to moment whenever we can, and bringing the heart back whenever we find the mind has drifted off, gotten distracted or disturbed. And because of this instruction about sitting, standing, walking, lying down, it really emphasizes that the cultivation of loving kindness is independent of activity, independent of posture. It's meant to be practiced at all times without exception. So really what the Buddha is pointing to with this instruction is that this is a stance from which we face the entirety of our experience without exception. So even when we get busy, sitting, standing, walking, lying down, hurrying from one place to another, we can do this in as many moments of the day as we remember, even if we're extremely busy. Because small moments, repeated many times through the day, add up to a lot. They really do. We discount that. What's that? Not very long. 60 times a day, that's an hour. So if we can cultivate loving kindness in these small moments of waiting for a traffic light to change, or standing in a queue, or for the 2 seconds we remember as we're going from place to place, whenever it is, this adds up through the day. And it's not like formal practice here, but it's important that we do this. It adds up. And not to get discouraged or self-judgmental if it all kind of falls apart, if things are chaotic. To just as you do here, patiently keep going. I had one of those mornings this morning that was full of little interruptions, partly because of my own mistakes, partly just because of conditions. And for quite some time, I felt like I was running around like a chicken, you know. And I kept catching myself over and over again. Oh yeah, I'm totally lost in this busyness, in this kind of being flustered, having made mistakes or whatever, you know. But the practice is whenever that happens, just come back. And when you do that, it's very funny because you can be in the middle of, you know, just being really flustered, and then, oh yeah. There can be that flow of metta. And we hammer these messages of continuity and connection both because they're what creates the conditions for metta to arise here and now, but also because by maintaining this continuity, this is what establishes that habit that can play out any time and any place. So sometimes in the middle of being flustered, or in the middle of chaotic conditions. It can be really surprising when metta just arises and we wonder, wow, where did that come from? Well, part of what it came from is doing what we're doing here and doing what you do when you constantly and continually reincline the heart to loving kindness, even out there. So it can pop up seemingly by itself, but it comes up because actually we've cultivated in the past. And there's an axiom in neurobiology that I like very much. It's kind of a golden rule. It says neurons that fire together wire together. And what that means very practically is that the actual physical structure of our minds is malleable, is changeable, and that the patterns of thought and emotions we have when we start the meditation, when we begin our metta practice, are not kind of written in stone, but they're modified by this repeated reinclination. So every time we say the phrase, whether we're really deeply connected or not, but especially if we're deeply connected to it, may you be well, happy, and peaceful. May you be well, happy, and peaceful. The neurons in there are firing. And the more we do that, the more they wire together. And that becomes a more habitual, I put this in quotes, permanent circuit. This is how new habits are created, and this is what we're doing in the practice. So when we incline the mind again and again to the metta wish, to the phrase, those neurons are firing again and again and again and again. And eventually those firing patterns become linked, which is what we mean when we say, oh, it's the default setting. So metta becomes our default setting rather than anxiety, fear, self-judgment, whatever our old patterns might have been. And this really highlights why continuity over many activities is really important. Because as with any kind of learning, if we have complex associations with a given activity, they're easier to remember. So, for example, associating the cultivation of loving kindness with the sitting posture in formal retreat happens. And so at some point, when we sit down, there's an automatic, the phrases just begin without having to try to bring them up. And it's the same process. This is why the chanting is so incredibly wonderful, because that's actually a very complex activity. There are the words, there's the rhythm, there's the melody, there's the physical activity of doing the chanting, there's the remembering of the words. There are lots of associated activities happening there, which makes the phrases easier to learn. And with chanting, I find it very amusing because there are so many different chanting styles. So for example, when here in Burma, the sound of the Pali is very, very different than it is, say, in Sri Lanka or Thailand. It's extremely different. And when I hear the Burmese Metta Sutta, for example, it's as if it's a completely different text than when it's chanted in the more kind of international Pali that you hear in Sri Lanka or Thailand. And so I've had to learn two completely different quote-unquote chants, even though it's the same words. But the melody is different, the pronunciation is different. So this chanting is actually a wonderful way to embed the metta in our hearts and minds really deeply. And the more areas of our lives that we can bring this cultivation of kindness into, the more associations we'll have. And the easier it is to call back the loving kindness in those times when we find we've slipped, it's gone. So sitting, walking, lying down, dressing, bathing, sweeping, taking care of the body, all of these things we do every day. The more we associate these activities with the cultivation of metta, the more those neuronal firing patterns that are associated with the well-wishing are happening again and again and again. And the cultivation of the loving kindness eventually becomes hardwired together with those activities. And it is a learning process. Because, of course, out there the continuity is going to break. And one reason for this, actually, is how easily we get distracted or rattled when things change. Change actually can be quite disruptive. It's one reason here on retreat, it's simpler. Things are quieter. There isn't so much change happening. And it's really helpful to become familiar with this process on retreat and to develop the habit of continuity through change and across transitions. So we have that habit also when we go home. So we've received that instruction. Every waking moment, cultivate loving kindness. Regardless of where you go and what you're doing, regardless of all those hundreds of little transitions, regardless of all that change, to keep the active cultivation of metta in the foreground. And if you take a moment to reflect about where you tend to lose the continuity, you'll notice that disruptive nature of change. And this is why we don't like it. Let's face it, it's like, oh, it was all going so well, and now, And this is why on retreat people get upset by small things, because here, as I said, it's simple. But when somebody slams a door, our silence is suddenly disrupted. And we react out of that surprise. And it can be quite amusing to watch this process. We're sitting, going along, everything's just, well, happy, peaceful, well, happy, peaceful. Everything's arising by itself, and just steadily the metta is flowing. And then somebody walks by and the floor creaks. And 5 minutes later, we realize we're spinning out on stories about that annoying yogi. Where did that metta go? It was just the floor creaking. One little sound. Off we go. And it can be quite subtle the way things change. So maybe we're going along in the practice And a thought arises, and it's a memory. The mind has been calm and peaceful, and the metta has been flowing, and this one memory arises. And just like with that floor creak, off we go. Sometime later, maybe we wake up out of the fantasy about the future, or remorse about the past. Or more simply, maybe we just change the category of the being for whom we're radiating loving kindness. And it's kind of like going a bump in the road. It's like, Sometimes that can be very easy, but sometimes this transition is where we begin to lose the thread of the practice. Or we change our posture. We get up from sitting and we recover the phrase and the practice halfway up the hill on the way to breakfast. Not to mention the more complicated things like doing the yogi job, eating, dressing. There are countless small changes like this throughout the day. And the more complicated things are, the faster they move, the more potential places there are for the metta to be dropped. And I love the signs in England at train stations where it says, "Mind the gap." Yeah. So mind the gap. Be careful. This is why continuity is really important, because we need to develop the habit of developing metta in the middle of all this change, in the middle of this flow. So do pay particular attention in the times between one activity and another. In all those big and small transitions of the day, when changing conditions can disrupt the flow of the development of metta. Both in the formal practice and in your general activities. In the formal practice, it can be really, really helpful to slow down. So, say, for example, you're about to get up from a sitting. You open your eyes. Don't immediately get up. This is simple. Go slowly. Repeat the phrases and bring a little energy into remembering, okay, before I stand up, I'm going to repeat the phrase a couple of times. Open the eyes, pause, repeat the phrase, and then keep repeating the phrase as you stand up. Don't move immediately. Keep. If you've lost the repetition of the phrase in the standing, bring it back. Repeat it a couple of times, and then begin to walk. And beginning to walk only when that phrase is back. And, you know, so on up to the dining room or wherever you're going. Leading with the phrase rather than the activity. This really helps to keep the continuity going. Often it's the activity that leads the way and the phrase can follow, but really lead with the phrase. Let the phrase come first, and then do whatever you're going to do. And if you're doing something complicated, like your yogi job, it can be very, very helpful to stop in the middle of doing whatever it is. or when starting one phase of the action, or ending. And somebody was telling me yesterday that he set a bell on his phone to go every couple of minutes. So he was doing his yogi job, and every time the bell would go, he'd stop. I think this is a terrific idea, if you can do that. You know, it's just like, oh yeah, metta, where was I? This is a really clever way of giving us a way to recall the cultivation of metta when we might have been pulled into all the doing. Of course, when you're out there at work, you can't more easily do this. Your coworkers might wonder, what's with that bell every 2 minutes? But when the phone rings, this is a Thich Nhat Hanh trick, and it's so brilliant. When the phone rings, don't immediately pick it up. The world won't end if you don't answer immediately. Bring the loving kindness up. Let the phone ring one or two more times, and then pick it up. Let that be a metta bell. And this kind of attention to continuity is important for all of us, whether we're staying here, whether we're going out there. It can be used whether we're staying here and whether we're going out there. And of course, out there is more challenging, because the way change can distract us from the metta is more obvious out there. The disruptive aspect of change is more obvious out there, because everything's moving more quickly and it's more complicated. There's a relentlessness to change in daily life, and we don't have the long, simple blocks of time that we have here on retreat. You know how it can be. We're multitasking. We're basically, it feels like we're bobbing along in this river of change. Changing situations, changing demands on our time. And just as there are an infinite number of ways and places to forget, if we change the lens of how we look at that, it can be very helpful. Because there are actually an infinite number of ways and places for us to remember. To call back the metta attitude if it's gone away. And the more you pay attention here when things are simple, the easier it will be out there when they're much more complicated. And ultimately, for somebody with a very purified mind, there isn't any difference between formal practice and everyday life. When the metta is developed completely, when wisdom is developed completely, the difference between those two disappears. In the other chant we do, the chant about the boundless states, the four boundless states, this is the Buddha's answer to somebody who asked, what is your practice? What do you do? And this is how he replied. He said, through the day, I do this. Metta sahagatena. I will abide pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise, the second, the third, the fourth, above, below, and all around. and to all as to myself. I abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. This is how the Buddha lived. And he lived a very full and engaged life. His days and nights were very active. He wasn't sitting by himself quietly in a cave somewhere after he became enlightened. He thought of doing that, but he didn't. He spent the next years of his life tirelessly and ceaselessly sharing what he had learned, what he had understood. Meeting with anyone who came, whether they be a hermit or a beggar or a member of a kind of argumentative sect who wanted to come and disagree with him, or kings, anyone, celestial beings. 20 hours a day for the rest of his life. And that radiation of loving kindness did not falter. Yeah, okay. So I can almost hear you thinking, as I do when I, you know, did, particularly when I first heard this, it's like, oh yeah, okay. Well, that's the Buddha. Forget it. That's not me. No way. Of course, you're right. That is the Buddha. And this is our potential. He wasn't a god. He was a human being. And over again, he gave this instruction to practice so that all of us understand what he understood, have the same purity of mind as he had. This instruction that he gave and his example shows what we are all capable of. So please, don't dismiss your potential. I'm kind of choking up here. Don't dismiss your potential. And whether you're staying or going, the bottom line is that if you want to develop loving kindness, all you need to do is to keep going in the practice as best as you can, in whatever way you can. So whether you're staying or going, the instruction is the same. Just do it. Whether it be formal practice or just getting playful and creative, finding ways to cultivate loving kindness through the day, because every little bit counts. And if we do that, the practice takes care of itself. And it all boils down to trusting the process. One thing Munindraji used to say a lot, and it comes out of the primary texts, is the Dhamma takes care of those who take care of the Dhamma. And taking care of the Dhamma means just practicing. Even if it feels like nothing's happening, even if it feels like and we think we're wasting our time, we're not. So take care of the Dhamma. Practice in whatever ways you can. And then compassion, insight, they take care of themselves. So metta and cultivating it across the disruptions of change. Now I want to say just a little bit about how the cultivation of loving kindness can support the heart's opening to change itself on the deepest levels. And as you know, metta bhavana, the cultivation of loving kindness, is a concentration practice, not an insight practice. So the point of this practice is not to face change directly in order to understand it, but as the metta develops, as the momentum grows, there comes an attitude of heart that allows that heart to more easily open to change and be with it as it is. The Buddha taught the Dhamma really as a practice and a way for beings to be free from clinging and the suffering caused by that. And his example shows that the free mind, the mind that's free from clinging and craving, is naturally filled with loving kindness and has no resistance or rigidity or need to control in spite of all the change that happens around it and to it, because the mind is also changing. There's nothing that stays stable for one instant. So these transition times in the practice and these transition times in retreat are really wonderful places to cultivate that aspect of loving kindness that is friendliness towards ourselves and all beings when things are unstable, unpredictable, and totally out of our control. I mean, in other words, all the time. But now, in these transition times of retreat, it's really obvious. And things change. And we can use this. We can use this as an opportunity rather than a difficulty. Because the bottom line is that life does this all the time. There's gain and loss. One changing to another. Praise changes to blame. Fame changes to disrepute. Pleasure changes to pain. These are the eight worldly winds. And these conditions go back and forth, back and forth. And this gain and loss are big ones for most of us. We can get so triggered by this on many levels at this transition time of a retreat. And to remember that this is universal and to incline the mind towards the loving kindness is the Buddha's basic instruction. Feed the wholesome, he said. Purify the mind. And our experience is constantly morphing from one thing to another on a momentary level, and on the more gross, conventional level. this change, this dissolution, this alteration is that universal characteristic of all phenomena in the world that are conditioned. So notice those feelings of loss that might come up when quiet is replaced by distractibility, when metta is replaced by aversion. And to step back from this flow and to, with that understanding that that knows that this is the way all things are, to have that metta attitude towards the flow itself can be incredibly helpful, both for small losses and big ones. With any loss, there are two things that can happen. There can simply be the experience of loss with balance, or there can be the experience of loss accompanied by sadness, by grief, by clinging, by aversion. I find it really inspiring, actually. The life of the Buddha has so many wonderful stories. And one that I find particularly touching around loss is what happened when he was a very old man. It wasn't long before he himself died. And his two chief disciples, Sariputta and Mahamoggallana, died within a couple of weeks of each other. And sometime a little after that, he was gathered together with a number of disciples, you know, 500 plus bhikkhus. And somebody asked him what it felt like, what this loss felt like to him. And he said this, he said, "This assembly, O bhikkhus, O monks, appears indeed empty to me now that Sariputta and Mahamoggallana have passed away. But it is marvelous and most wonderful, monks, that when such a great pair of disciples has passed away, there is no grief, no lamentation on the part of the Blessed One. For of that which is born, come to being, put together, is subject to dissolution. So how should it be said that it should not dissolve? That indeed is not possible." It's really poignant. He acknowledges the loss. He acknowledges the change. But there's this great metta heart and the heart of wisdom that understands. And there's no grief, there's no lamentation accompanying this loss. And I don't know about you, but can you imagine losing your two closest friends and colleagues within 2 weeks and saying truthfully, deeply, "For that which is born is subject to dissolution"? Maybe not quite yet, but this is where the metta goes. This is acceptance of things. Resting with what is, with kindness. And And this kind of balance that the Buddha showed in the face of great loss is firstly the result of deep wisdom into the nature of reality. But it's also the articulation of that deep, abiding loving kindness. That immense openness of heart in the face of great loss is manifested as acceptance, patience, tenderness, kindness. And all of these things together is what allows us to touch that loss and open to deep compassion. And fortunately in life, most of us have smaller changes to cope with, less intense kinds of change. But with any kind of change that might rattle our cage, having this foundation of loving kindness offers us a means to touch our experience of that change honestly, but directly and immediately, without needing to control it or avoid it. Because the nature of metta is that it allows things to be exactly as they are. That spirit of metta that is flexible, peaceful, and free from entanglement. So when our metta is strong, we become, and our hearts become, much more resilient and able to hold all sorts of things with compassion and humor and understanding. So even if we do spin out momentarily, or even for a time, we don't obsess about the negative aspects of loss or change, or the negative aspects about how we are spinning out. It provides space and perspective. And here's where that habit of pausing that I spoke about can be really, really helpful. In transitions, big or small, or whenever there's difficulty, if we breathe into that experience with kindness, it gives a kind of space that makes it possible to be with these worldly winds with much more stability. There's a wonderful teacher in America at Spirit Rock, Sylvia Boorstein, who kind of deeply embodies loving kindness and humor. And she has a mantra for difficulties that I really, really like, that I want to share. And she says sometimes when things are really hard, she says to herself, "Oh, sweetheart, you're in pain. Relax, take a breath. Let's pay attention to what's happening. Then we'll figure out what to do." It's that pausing, acknowledging pain. Oh, oof, this is painful. And not giving in to that immediate impulse to try to fix or control. Relax, take a breath, feel it. This is metta. Then we'll figure out what to do. So just taking that breath and offering ourselves this friendly metta attention that really acknowledges that pain is happening or difficulty is happening can make a surprising amount of difference in how we experience that pain and that difficulty. It's this kind of metta that gives us the space and the permission to feel what we're feeling. It doesn't immediately try to override it with activity, with doing. And when there's a space around that change and around the pain that that change can bring, this is where we gain the capacity to be with it with deeper understanding. With that understanding that sees the nature of change, sees the nature of all things. And when the heart is established in loving kindness, it allows us to access that experiential understanding of the universal characteristics of all conditioned phenomena. That they change constantly, that they can't be controlled, and that they're a source of pain anytime there's even a little bit of attachment. Somebody the other day was saying what a relief it is to open the hand and stop controlling. This is the articulation of that. And without this loving kindness, we're much more easily stuck in ego-based fear and reactivity. But with metta, we have the antidote to that, because it pops that bubble of ego and allows us to live more comfortably in alignment with the way things are. And once we're established in metta, we can navigate the changes of life with much more grace and ease, with kindness for ourselves and empathy for everybody else, because we're all in the same boat. You're not the only one facing this. We all do. And the fact that we all do is something we often forget. We think we're the only ones suffering. But everybody in this room is living in the same universe of causes, conditions, and karma. We have a mind, we have a body, and we're faced with this flow of changing. And with metta, we can rest in that and see it for what it is. It just takes moments of pausing in the rush of life and being kind. So I want to end with the wish that may we all be able to cultivate and dwell with metta through the many transitions of life, big and small, and may that metta support ever deeper wisdom and compassion in all of us for the welfare and benefit of all beings in all realms and in all directions.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.